Welcome to all of them. Welcome to Parliament. It's Michael for kick-off. Thanks, Michael.
Chair, thank you very much. I think let me first indicate that we obviously appreciate this session because they obviously give us an opportunity to interact with Parliament, specifically the Portfolio Committee on Transport, just briefly on our progress, our future plans for ATNS and so on. Chair, I must indicate that it obviously gives me a great pleasure to preside over an institution like ATNS, primarily because of the fact that we have seen a lot of stability over the past few years in the organization, and a lot of progress in terms of the programs that we have set for ourselves, the objectives, and most importantly, the imperatives which have been identified to us by government through the Minister of Transport, who is obviously our chairman. I must say, Chair, that when I took over ATNS in 2003, the organization was fairly in uncharted territory, in a sense that there were a number of challenges that we were confronted with at the time. And I'm happy to announce to the committee that we have actually made quite substantial progress since then, up until now, and we continue to make such progress. One notable progress that we've made, Chair, amongst other things, is certainly to improve the way we've been doing business, to reprioritize, particularly around issues of infrastructure development. And I think since 2003, we've seen quite a lot of investment going in into our infrastructure to ensure that we're able to have the capacity to update and renew the equipment that we have at ATNS and that we obviously run. I'm sure that members will appreciate that the environment that we operate in or within is obviously a highly technological environment, and we have to obviously keep abreast with developments as they happen internationally and elsewhere. I think internally within ATNS we've also had very notable successes. When we joined the board, amongst other things, and which continues to be our biggest challenge, was the issues around transformation of ATNS, to make sure that it is obviously consistent with our imperatives. And I'm pleased, Chair, to indicate that the board has taken this particular role and leadership in making sure that we really move ATNS to new areas. Currently, as you all know, we obviously have a new CEO who is now not necessarily new anymore. A female CEO, the first time in the history of the company, and a black CEO for that matter, Chair. We've also introduced quite a lot of new black executives within our ranks, something that we've never had in the past. And I think the board primarily has been under a lot of criticism that as we bring in black executives, particularly because we are operating in the aviation industry, there were a lot of saying that, there are no black executives who can take up positions in the aviation industry. And I think that theory has been proven wrong, because we have really done everything possible to make sure that we really transform ATNS. It is certainly a challenge that we're still grappling with. We actually had an evaluation, performance evaluation program for the CEO on Monday this week, where we indicated that one of the key things that the board will be looking at moving forward will to make sure that that transformation process actually translates into other organs of the organization in our divisions, to make sure that we're able to attract and bring in young black air traffic controllers within our ranks. I think there are already programs that we have set in place, and we're hoping that we will definitely move with speed moving forward. So I think the CEO will introduce our delegation and will also take us through the presentation. We have a presentation that was prepared for the committee just to brief you on our programs and also to also brief the committee on our performance over the last year and most importantly our future for the next 3 to 5 years. So I'll hand over to the CEO who will introduce the committee and obviously take us through the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mabanta, and good morning to all the members. I'd like to just start by introducing the executive team members that are with me. To my left is Ms. Bonnie Dubate. Bonnie is our executive manager for service delivery, so she makes sure that on a day-to-day basis our operations are run efficiently and safely. Right behind me is Mr. Solomon Ugomazulu. Mr. Solomon is the company secretary, and he makes sure that obviously in terms of governance we are compliant. Immediately behind me I have Ms. Jean Liber, and she is the executive manager for training. So she makes sure that we obviously achieve the numbers of people in the organization that we need to. Right at the back was without a suit and tie is Mark. And he is Mark Smart. He is our communications specialist. He makes sure that we look good. So really welcome to all the team. I could not bring all of the team with because we've obviously got a whole range of other things that are happening at the moment, including the establishment of the Northeast African VSAC for the guys at the VSAC. So I do apologize for the absence. They would have loved to have been here. What I'd like to do with the presentation this morning, and you will see that we have begun to rally around the 2010 theme. For those members that haven't noticed, that's actually applicable. It took some time for myself to notice, but I just pointed out. And obviously all of the streamers are just already celebrating in anticipation of a very successful 2010 World Cup. I've got three parts to the presentation. The first part is just to talk a little bit about ACNS and air navigation, in particular just to remind members of the business. Then I'm going to be looking at the performance in the last financial year, which is the 2006-07 financial year. And then I would like to share with the members what our intentions are for the 2007-08 financial year, which is the year that we're currently in. Okay. So, if I can just talk a little bit about ACNS. ACNS was obviously established in 2003, and at that time, we were set up to manage the air traffic movement at 9 airports. And in terms of the legislation, we are legally required to provide the services at those 9 airports. However, in addition, we also provide services at 12 airports on a contractual basis. Currently, we have about 789 staff, and we manage an airspace of 22 million square kilometers, which is right down to the South Pole. In fact, we're really proud to also say that we manage 10% of the world's airspace. In terms of aircraft movements, we are managing 645 aircraft movements, and our capacity at Johannesburg, which is our biggest airport, our busiest airport at the moment, is 56 aircraft movements per hour. It's gone up since this, and we will be moving to 72 over the next couple of years. By 2010, we should be sitting on about 64. Okay, our vision is to be the preferred supplier of air traffic, navigational and associated services to the African continent and surrounding regions. And our mission is to provide safe, and I have to, in fact, I should really put the safe in bold and underline, safe, orderly, expeditious and efficient air traffic, navigational and associated services. And every single decision that we ever take is directly related to providing the service safely. We work, everything that we do in terms of 5 strategic imperatives, and this drives everything that we do. The first is the continuous improvement of our safety performance. The second is to become an employer of choice, and I always tell my staff that we're very far off. We are still busy working towards becoming an employer of choice. And then also we want to become a performance-based service provider. What we mean by this is that we are prepared to set targets and have those targets measured and benchmarked with against other similar-sized providers in the world. Then obviously we do not receive a government subsidy at all. So one of our main objectives is to maintain long-term financial sustainability, and over the last period I think we've done fairly well in this regard. And then last but not least, the global air navigation environment is consolidating. So there are going to be fewer air navigation providers in the world. At the moment, each country has got their own air navigation provider. It's anticipated that we're going to have between 15 and 20 providers by 2015-2020. So 18 is on a regular basis positioning itself in order to be one of the 20. Okay. And I will talk a little bit to what we're doing in relation to that. This is just a graphic which really shows that a flight plan is filed, and then obviously the different phases of flight. We control the aircraft in the different phases of flight. In order to do that, we need navigation equipment, which you'll see is referred to via RCMEs. For precision approaches at Cape Town, for example, we need ISS. And then apart from the navigation equipment, we obviously also need to manage the traffic in different types of airspace, which is air zone control, approach control, and of course area control. We use extensively, we use communication interventions such as HF and VHF. HF allows sensors to talk to each other, VHF allows the sensor to talk to the aircraft. And then of course we also use a lot of surveillance equipment such as radars. In South Africa, because our airspace is so busy, we use both primary and secondary radar so that we can positively identify aircraft and therefore reduce the separation between aircraft to increase the capacity. So there's a whole lot of, that's just a sort of a graphic demonstration of what happens. And apart from all of the communication, navigation, surveillance, which we often refer to as CMS, people is obviously a main contributor to the way in which we provide business. That is just a quick background to the company, just a reminder of members, because we were here last year, launched, that's what maybe you've forgotten all about. Okay, now I'd like to very briefly look at the performance of ATMS in the last financial year specifically. But I have taken a 5-year picture. I have my own weakness, which I'll point out up front. I need to have a big picture. And so I'm going to look at the business over the last 5 years, but obviously the focus is on the last financial year specifically. Okay, we are not focused on necessarily on revenue and profits, etc. We focus on safety, but it's always important to know that if you didn't have the necessary money to do to make the kind of improvements that we have made, it could also be a different story. So we do comment on the fact that our revenue is very stable. Over the last 5 years, we have seen a systematic increase in revenue. In the current financial year, that's the forecast figure, it's looking more like 585 million at this stage. When we prepared the slides, we looked at the data as at the end of March, but it's set to be slightly higher than that. So revenue, the company is very stable, very robust. In terms of costs, the costs have increased by about 13% over the last 5 years. The committee members will see, however, that salaries have increased by about 16%, the salary cost. And that is not a bad thing because we have, first of all, we've increased the numbers of people, but we've also ensured that our salaries are competitive so that we can compete with the other markets. Currently, there's a global shortage of 13% in the global economy, and we are competing for air traffic controllers globally at the moment. Profits after tax, and obviously when I talk to my airline colleagues, they're very sensitive about this particular slide, but you'll see that our profit was very high last year. It's come down after we implemented a 0%. It's not our intention to make huge profits. I really do want to point that out, but this year is looking like we aim to make about 81 million. It's a lot lower than last year. It's designed to be lower because we, in fact, went with a 0% tariff increase in the last financial year. This particular slide shows the tariff increases that ATMS has had over the last 5 years. You will see that in the 02, 03, 03, 04, 04, 05 financial year, the company under-recovered, okay, which is why the regulator then instructed that we increase the tariff by 22%, and I'm really comfortable to say that we are now achieving the ROCEs as required by the regulator. So we're not making excessive profits. I think that's really what I wanted to point out to the committee.
I'm just wondering, can you explain why we are under recovery?
Basically, what has happened historically is that the previous board felt that they've always got in. The tariff, we allowed tariff increases. We gave permission to achieve an X percent. And the previous board took a decision to go in lower than CPI. But then what was happening, we were in fact eroding the capital base of the company, which is why the regulator instructed that we actually increase the tariff. So the tariff went up by 22%, and the board decided that they would take that 22%.
It was based entirely on where the tariff was set.
Yes. So it's a combination of things. So it's the three things that affect your ROCE. The one is your tariff. The second is obviously the aircraft movement, and what you will see in later slides is in fact the air traffic movement is growing a lot faster than was ever planned for. And then the third thing is if you understand on tactics, that is really what determines your ROCE. So you'll see that, and I think the chairman wants to just comment on that as well.
I think also the issue that I think the main motivation as well that led us to 0% increase last year. It was also informed after we've also interacted with the committee, and also the president spoke about, you know, us obviously as a parastatus looking at the cost of reducing, you know, the way we do business. And I think that motivation carried through the way how we wanted to move forward in terms of our business.
And
I'd
like to refer in the presence of my airline counterparts, I like to refer to ATMS as a responsible monopoly. We are a monopoly, but we are a responsible monopoly. And I think they're coming to accept that concept. In the current financial year, So in the 07-08 financial year, we are also currently, we haven't increased the tariffs either. But that is simply because we are in the process of finalizing the commission process. I'm also very, very...
It's relevant to this debate here that we talk about in terms of the tariff. Is there any influence in the regulator determining the tariff in relation to other international norms, or is it just purely, as Mike has indicated, TPIS and trying to, you know, balance the book? Or, I mean, I just want to get a picture of what determines that. Is it
okay? What I can say is that we have been engaging, it's quite a long process. Every 3 years, we basically plan on a rolling basis for the next 5 years. So what then happens, we then go to the users and we say, we want to build this, we want to have so much stock, we think the traffic is going to grow this way, this is what's happening globally, this is what we're expecting to happen. We then put together, and I must tell you, it's a stack of paper, and they want every last bit of detail. So, you know, the chairman of the Airlines Association, Mr. John Morrison, is famous for coming to a consultation meeting with his magnifying glass and checking every single number. So we explain. We run about 5 computers, not more, I'm exaggerating, but, you know, so we are accountable for what we want to invest and what we want to spend. So it's a very long process. In fact, the regulator then uses Raising Batteries KPMG to assess ours and access plans for the next 5 years. And they have now come back with a draft commission which we will be engaging with the regulator on. So it's a very, very technical process. And in fact, we have a system comparable with the United Kingdom. So they follow a very similar system. Yes, the tariffs are constantly negotiated. We can't just put our tariffs up. So that is really to ensure that we don't abuse our monopoly position.
But I think what Steve was asking was how do they compare their tariffs with other...
No, we're not expensive at all. In fact, we're probably one of the cheapest providers in Africa, and Bonnie will try and look up, because we also benchmark. We are very part of the Commercial Air Navigation Service Organization, and we benchmark our tariffs. We're probably in the lower quartile. So our tariffs are not high, but if Bonnie can find a slide, we'll try and show that as well. No problem. Then another slide that I'm actually very, very proud of is that in the last financial year, we have achieved almost 100% of the allowable traffic. So we were given 217.3 million to spend on traffic by the regulator, and we spent it. So we are very, very proud. That is something very different. Historically, we've spent in the region of 50 to 75%. So so I'm really pleased with that particular picture. This is a really interesting slide as well that I would like to take the committee through, but please, nothing to be alarmed about. I explained earlier that our business is very much dependent on the effective functioning of communication, navigation, and surveillance infrastructure. Over the last period, we've seen a slight downward turn, and I want to explain each of those findings. First, in the case of communication, we're slightly under target. The reason for that is that we have a lot of cable theft. Obviously, nothing to worry about if a cable is stolen. All of our systems operate on a triple redundancy, so there's another system that kicks in order for us to provide the service, maybe a bit slower, maybe a couple of delays here and there. But what we have done now, in order to mitigate, because we don't want to be with our communication system, what we have done, we are in the process of installing an internal domestic research system in the country. And that will therefore mitigate the risk of any communication, telecom communication failure. In the case of surveillance, the committee will see that we've also taken a slight downward trend. The reason for that is that we are currently upgrading all of the radar around the country, and again, we are at planned downtime. Okay, so that is downtime that has been planned. In the case of navigation, we have over the last 2 years been renewing all of the terrestrial navigation infrastructure. We're replacing all of the GME, NDVs, etc. with VORs. And that is a process that is nearly reaching its completion. So again, planned downtime. I've got a really lovely picture. You know, just to sometimes it's got to give, I've got a picture on my cell phone which shows the new radar in East London. And, you know, it's actually physical, it's quantifiable. Once that radar's up and running, we're going to have the most amazing positive identification of any target on the screen. Okay, but just to make sure that none of you are nervous, we are obviously approaching target, and in fact, in future we'll probably exceed the target, which is an ICAO set target. When I showed this to my staff at the company, the navigation engineers then said to me, okay, they're the only oaks that can have a bonus, but I said, no, it doesn't work like that. So. But we've achieved 99.60, when we should have achieved 99.64. So it's really, really marginal.
When you're talking about the percentages there, are we talking about the defense in terms of equipment availability,
yes,
operation,
yes,
operationability of the equipment?
Yes, that's correct. Obviously, you have the target, you'll see the target on the top line, and then what we've actually achieved, you'll see it on the red bar, the differences calculated in these. So it's very, very marginal. It's nothing to be worried about. However, as management, we obviously monitor this very, very closely, and we want to know why. If the target isn't achieved, why it hasn't been achieved.
Okay. Now, I think with communication, that 0.4% downtime is not a 0.4% absence of any communication.
No,
it's a fallback and there's a fallback.
We've got redundancy.
So the same applies to navigation.
All of the others, okay. Yes. We've basically got redundancies in place for all of our technologies. And in fact, we're also putting redundancies in place for, obviously the redundancy now for communication will be the visa. And then at all of our airports now, we're also putting redundancies in place for UPSs, generators, etc. So that we just make sure that our system can function under any conditions. I don't know if anyone wants to add. Okay. Yes, we're adding. So what we're doing is we're making sure that, you know, because we've got, you know, all of our systems, for example, if we lose electricity, we've got the system right here, we've got the UPE, we've got a generator, UPE, and the battery at the control position, you know. So we're just making sure that that we know exactly what needs to be there.
What I wanted to add was Renan is talking about all the electric car-driven system, in the event that all of that is gone, the app procedures in place, which are known in the whole industry, the airline, the pilots will know them and the controllers will know them, which will enforce the change. So there is even a minor system.
And we refer to the one system as a radar system and the other system as a procedural system. So if ever we have problems, we will go procedural and then you will notice suddenly there'll be a whole lot of delays. But ATC delays, not delays from other parts of the industry. Then you can be a little bit worried if you want to be. I think just to maybe Sam Bonnie will add as well. Sorry, Bonnie, I didn't see you wanting to respond to that question. In terms of the global arena, AZNS is seen as probably one of the top five e-navigation providers in terms of innovation and the way that we do business. We learn from other people, but we also have people coming to learn from us. So I don't know if Bonnie wants to say the same thing. Yeah. So we're very open to learning. In fact, we've just had the UK e-navigation provider come and assist our academy from top to toe. And all of the changes that they recommended is implemented, and we've seen huge improvements in performance. So we're very open to learning, and obviously we're also open to sharing with other people what we're doing. We have a lot of interaction, for example, the Ghanaians and a whole range of other African service providers have been to come and see how we do business. So we have people coming in all the time. So we learn and we share. Yeah. Okay. This is obviously quite a favorite slide of ours because there's been a lot of improvement in terms of the delay. Now, again, last time we were here, Bonnie gave a whole explanation, and I'm going to ask her to do the same now, because delays are not always caused by AT&S. They're not always e-navigation-related delays. There are a whole range of issues that cause delays, and I know... my colleague there sometimes gets very irate when we have delays in his London in particular. And so I have had to sometimes deal with Mr. Farrell on some of those issues. But I just want to spend a few minutes just talking through some of the aspects in our operational environment that cause delays.
The biggest cause of delay, airport delays, is weather. That's the biggest one. It takes the biggest chunk. And then the second one, which takes the biggest chunk, is the construction. I think we've all seen the construction that is happening at the FAJS
or
Tambo in the ATS language, it's called the FAJS. At OR Tambo, the construction that is taking place there is causing lots of delays due to sometimes parking, sometimes to, you know, and a host of other things which are there. And then the other thing which causes major delays is both electricity, the availability that Janelle has spoken about in terms of electricity and telecom. All the time when there's a problem with telecom and Eskom, you must know that somehow ATMS will be affected instead, because we have to readjust all our operational systems into whatever mode that is being used at that particular time. And then the last one is obviously the ATMS related one, which is mainly when we have problems with staffing. As a result of the shortage of staff that we have currently, we have the bare minimum. As soon as any controller takes off sick, books off sick, or you know whatever, and any absenteeism from an air traffic controller point of view, it does cause us to make sure, because we're looking at safety more than anything, then we reduce our service availability. So those are the four major things that cause us to make. But the biggest one is weather, which is out of control.
Okay. course, the weather situation, particularly in summer in Gauteng, and then in winter in the Western Cape. So in winter we've got foggy conditions, and then we have to have the RSs calibrated to Cat 3 operations. And in Gauteng it's thunderstorms. Now we saw what happens in bad thunderstorms. It's better to be delayed and not to take off into the thunderstorms. And the thunderstorms that we have in Gauteng are nothing that you see in other parts of the world. So they're quite severe.
Okay.
I don't know whether this interaction is allowed, rather breaking the sequence, but there's a very important thing here, and Brunel knows it's a problem, and it's security.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't mentioned that, because I raised it because of the East London scenario, and the Cape Town scenario, where, you know, the lights have been removed, and the actual letdown facilities were also removed. Now, can you just explain, as you did to me, because I think we need to be reassured, that 18 meters security of its equipment, and who is responsible for securing it, because I understand there was stuff put in and it was taken out literally within weeks. So that was not mentioned by Bonnie, and I don't know whether the certificate is left out because, you know, I'm aware of those.
Yeah. I think obviously we always limit ourselves to HMS related tests, etc. So we had, in the case of, we had Telkom cable tests. However, I just want to point out that there's a very clear separation between what HMS is responsible for and what ACT is responsible for. So runway lighting, the ISs, all of that, those are all ACTA owned and operated equipment. Obviously, we maintain the ISs because it's very integral to the work. It's an instrument landing system. So basically, in poor visibility conditions, if you don't have an IS calibrated to Cat 3 at Cape Town, Cat 3A, an aircraft cannot land in the fog. It has to then be diverted. But if we've got a Cat 3 IS in low visibility conditions, the aircraft will land itself. Okay, but we've got to have the facility on the ground. And the aircraft has to be equipped, and the pilot has to have the rating to fly in low visibility conditions. Now, sometimes, you know, when the copper wires or whatever stolen from the ISs, which I think is what Mr. Fowler is referring to, it's a major problem. Then you will see aircraft diverting to Bloemfontein and other destinations. But that is, and just so that the committee is aware as well, our installations, we have obviously a national key point. All of our staff are security cleared, should be security cleared before they can work for 18S. So apart from in terms of our conditions of employment, a security clearance as well as a medical clearance is required to work at the tower. We also have access, we have biometric access, so it's the fingerprinting access to all of our facilities. Our installations where we have radars is obviously properly fenced and properly secured as well. So for us, security, in fact, within the company now, we have set up a unit that is just looking after security.
So just to give the members also some bit of assurance, the CEO of ACTA sits on our board, Monica, and I think all those issues that cause this tension, particularly issues around cooperation and so on, are actually also addressed at this particular level. So it also assists us a great deal to be able to make sure that issues that affect operational efficiencies are actually addressed at the very high.
And then, I don't know.
Yeah.
If I could just add on to that, we met with the economic regulator on Friday, and he is in fact also indicating that he wants a lot more coordination of the activities of HNS and AXA. So I think that is definitely on the card. Okay, now I have lost my train of thought, so you're going to have to just bear with me now. We have, over the last 5 years, you will see that year on year, we had the air traffic movements grow by 3%. But in the last 2 years, they've grown by 5%, which is a lot more than was anticipated. Okay, but despite that, and despite all the challenges we have, we still managed to achieve the very, very low delay figures that we've achieved. Okay, I'm very, very proud of this particular slide. We have increased the number of licensed air traffic control staff complement over the last 12 months by 10.4%. Okay, so we have moved from 230 licensed air traffic controllers at the end of March last year to 254 licensed controllers March 07. We've also managed to improve, not we haven't done amazing, but we've managed to improve retention. Previously we were losing between 16 and 20 controllers a year. In the last financial year we only lost 14. While, you know, obviously I'm not proud that we've lost them, but it's at least we're beginning to arrest the trend. So it's going up and now it's beginning to come down. Okay, an ATC is an air traffic controller, and an air traffic controller is basically your first layer of air traffic control. SATC is a senior air traffic controller, that is your group that's slightly more advanced, and they basically are the controllers that operate at all of our regional airports. They are not qualified to operate in a radar condition, so they use procedural separation. And then you've got principal air traffic controllers, which are the ones that are very, very sought after. These are the ones that are probably the most qualified, you may find them at Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Durban, and obviously the most experienced. They generate the revenue. Yes. Those are the ones that you'll see the grey, the biggest part of the PATC. So we have now, I think the committee is aware, and I'll talk a little bit to it later on as well, the board has approved a retention intervention, the money for this is also being approved by the regulator. So over the next 5 years, we are spending 105 million rand on retention schemes to retain the air traffic controllers. 77% of the eligible principal air traffic controllers have signed up, and they have signed 4-year contracts. So we are very pleased about that. We obviously wanted to be just past the 2010 hurdle. We're also going to be negotiating an agreement with Solidarity, that is our main union, so that we have an agreement as to how we're going to provide services around 2010. Okay, this has contributed to a flattening of the incident rates. You'll see that we measure what we call, we have a term that we call safety ratio. We measure the safety ratio of the business. We've come down from 6.1 incidents per 100,000 movements to 3.5 incidents per 100,000 movements. Okay, an incident is a couple of possible things that can cause an incident. The one is we require aircraft to be separated 5 nautical miles apart and 1,000 foot apart. So if any of that separation is lost, we measure that as an incident. Similarly, if we have a runway incursion where an aircraft is, one aircraft crossing the runway while the other one is trying to take off, those are all measured as incidents. The incident is a measure of the probability of an accident happening. Okay? So you will see that the probability has come down, and obviously that is a good thing. Anybody operating in this business must always look at this figure. And in fact, I'm sure it's because of this figure as well. Okay. So I'm really pleased. Which means that we're about 7% short of our human capital plan. Now, what we have done, we now have a 5-year human capital plan, a Sarolian plan, where we actually look at the numbers of people that we need over the 5-year period. Now, this particular slide I want to show you is going to be quite interesting. It's quite an interesting slide. You will see that in terms of the human capital plan, we were required to have 274 people.
Page 70,
but
we've
done. Oh, did I jump? Okay, sorry. Yes. Okay, leaving us 7% short of our human capital target. Now, I want to talk to this slide because, in terms of the number that we should have had 374. In terms of what we achieved 254. So, in terms of the headcount, we're 7.3% short. However, because of the long lead time, even though these people are in the system, they're not operational yet. Okay? Because they've got, some of them have had to go for retraining, some of them have got to go for validation. So really, getting them operational takes up to 6 months. And at the moment, if you look at operationally what we're short 18%. Okay? But we've got the head, we train them, but they are in the process of validating, okay, to become operationally competent. Because we can't put anybody in front of the radar screen. They've got to be competent, they've got to be checked out. Validated is the word that we use. Okay. Yeah. Now just to look at the challenges going forward, you'll see that in terms of our human capital plan, I might have jumped a few as well, might have jumped a few again. I thought this could take the whole day, but it's every single slide. but if you look at the human capital plan, maybe it's not really necessary, you'll see that in order to meet the growth in demand, we are going to have to increase our number of HIV controllers by 7% a year going forward. Okay? So for this current financial year, my target and the target of the team is to achieve 296 licensed traffic controllers. Okay? To accommodate and respond to the 5% growth in demand. Okay, we are short on our EE target, we're about 3% short. And I have to confess, even though we women are very represented in our executive team, as you'll see, we haven't necessarily taken that through the organization. Only 53% of H&S staff are women. So that's certainly something that we need to look at going forward. Staffing is improving. However, our major strategic risk is still people. Okay? And as I've also said to the board, at the moment, where AT&S sits is that we have the potential already to move 72 aircraft an hour at Johannesburg, at our number. However, in order to ultimately achieve that, we're going to have a lot of improvements on the ground, and we're also going to have to increase the number of staff. So our biggest challenge going forward is staffing. Okay. Now I'm going to go on to presentation 3. And I'm doing this presentation because, I'm really proud of the work that AT&S is doing on the African continent. We are, as a company, we're very, very active on the African continent, but we're very small. We only have 11 people that are actively working on the continent. Obviously, they then draw on the rest of the resources in the business. We've got 3 things that we try and do. The first is to facilitate regional service provision, because we don't believe that there needs to be any safety issues in Africa. At the moment, the technology is there to provide regional services. The second issue is to lead the introduction of new technologies, which is increases in capacity, efficiency, and safety. And then finally, a big part of what we do is to develop people in the aviation industry. Okay, our coach, we don't want to, we've often been called Big Brother, but we don't want to be called that. If we are called, we're called Big Sibling, but preferably we want to be referred to as a partner. So we have, we've worked very hard over the last period to change the image of ATNS being a Big Brother. We also don't work alone. We work with like-minded partners. So we have, currently we've got relationships with ICAO, which is the International Civil Aviation Organization. We've got relationships with the International Air Transport Association, as well as the Federal Aviation Authority. So we do work with them, for them, etc. We also don't fund any of the work that we do on the continent from ATNS money. All of the money that we use is, we have third-party funders, and generally we will bankroll the project, but we recover the money through a security scheme. And generally it's dollar-based, so the profits and the losses are very, it depends very much on the exchange rate. Okay, our vision is a Cape to Cairo satellite communication network. All this will do is to, thanks Bonnie, all this will do is to achieve, is to ensure that we can actually communicate with all the air traffic control centers on the continent. Prior to the SADC VSAT, I want to advise you that there was no way of advising another control tower that an aircraft was coming. Okay? For the last 7 years, we have been operating the satellite network, facilitating over 2 million calls per annum. And we've also interconnected the system with the West African system, so we can talk to other West African states. And ATNS has also just recently won the tender to provide services in Northeast Africa. So we are getting closer to our vision. I've spoken a little bit that interconnects 13 states, as well as Burundi and Rwanda, so we can actually send messages to those countries. We are in the process of upgrading the system. Currently, we can only talk to the different centers. Going forward, we'll be able to have center to aircraft communication as well. So we are enhancing the platform. The launch date, for those of you that would like to come, is the 13th of September, and the minister will be launching the new upgraded visa. Northeast Africa, as I say, we are also busy implementing that. We're going to be connected to Djibouti, Egypt, Ethiopia, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Sudan, Somalia, Saudi Arabia, and Yemen. We are joining service providers with IATA, and the implementation is underway, launch date 18th of October. And then in terms of training, we've also increased the number of training that we've put through the Aviation Training Academy. And I think that has been thanks to the very hard work of the training team. Of the 1,461 people that we've trained, 906 were from outside the country, and 693 were from other African countries. Some of our students have included people from Tanzania, Mozambique, Namibia, Ghana, Uganda, Botswana, and Rwanda. GLC is a very, very big client of ours. Okay. That is the year that's gone past, but obviously within the context of the last 5 years, just to show that all of the indicators are moving in the right direction for the company. I just want to spend, and I don't want to spend too much time, I want to spend a bit of time talking to 0708 and beyond, to infinity and beyond. It sort of comes from, I heard the gentleman over there, you know, pick up on the 2010 and beyond. Okay, our strategic imperatives, they remain the same, although we are going to be focusing much more on retention and transformation going forward. I want to take each imperative as we go forward, and I'm just going to highlight the key points. I'm not going to go through each point, First of all, our target is to reduce the incidence to 2.5 incidents per 100,000 movements. That's a big task, but we're absolutely adamant that we're going to try and achieve that, maybe not over the next year, but going forward, we certainly will be achieving that. We have introduced a new, what we call, safety management system, and this is to keep in line with the developments in other air navigation providers. What we are trying to do is to increase safety awareness amongst the controllers. We also want them to instill a just culture. So in other words, we're saying in a high-risk business like ours, an incident is a normal occurrence. In fact, we don't even want to call it an incident. We now want to call it an occurrence. And we are dealing with the controllers in a way that is more humane. Previously, if you had an incident, my friend, you got taken off position, you got disciplined, cancelled. You know, it was quite an aggressive, negative process. Now we're trying to do the same thing, but in a more positive way. So basically the introduction, because we're not, you know, we're in a risky environment. That is our business. And then, of course, we are going to be improving the maintenance, so the standard maintenance and standard oversight. Having looked at our incidents over the period, we have found that our staff are not always following standard operating procedures, and which means that we need to insist that they do. We are also going to be conducting an international best practice audit, so we're going to have an international CAA come and audit the company to see how we're doing. In terms of long-range plan, and I think the committee will be especially interested in this, over the next period, we are going to be, it's anticipated that we're going to be growing quite fast. We're going to have to put in place a new air control center. Currently, we've got the air control center at Johannesburg and Cape Town. It's likely that we're going to have one air control center for the whole country, but obviously a lot bigger than we have now. We are also finalizing the roadmap for 2015-2020, where we are saying whatever that we want to be in 2015 and 2020. We're finalizing the planning for Kinshasa International Airport. And then obviously within the company, we're also initiating additional capacity, in particular that of East Coast modeling. Okay. I'm not going to comment on the other things unless... then in terms of, I think the board, the committee must be very interested in how we manage our system. Before we even start anything, we've got an HNS risk management system, and the executive committee meets every month to discuss the risks that the business is subjected to or at risk of. And that is, for example, where we took the decision to mitigate some of the energy and telecommunication risks. So we take it right at the operational level, we go in and we fix it. Then obviously we also have the quality system, and a lot of work goes into an active with an ISO 9001 accredited company, and we're actively dealing with issues of quality risk, etc. Now, a big part of what we're going to do going forward is to demystify air navigation. Because when you start talking, even my own executive team, sometimes, you know, when you start talking about the technical stuff, we've lost it. It's like numbers. So Bonnie and I have taken it upon ourselves to make sure that every executive manager can speak technical lingo. Okay? And that is something that we've already started to do. But apart from just dealing with it at an executive level, we also want to deal with it out there. So we already participate in the Bring a Girl Charter School. We already participate in, we provide a Max Winter School. In going forward, we'll continue with Mpumalanga and Papua teams. We try to also introduce it to the Cape, but unfortunately the Department of Education hasn't yet come to the party. At our air shows countrywide, we have a lot of focus on young people. Career exhibitions, we have all the career exhibitions, and then often we also go on to radio talk shows with a lot of young people coming in. This year, we are going to also be launching an aviation management program as a pilot. We're hoping to do this in cooperation with the GOT and the University of Pretoria. It will be a sub-accredited course and will be and can be added to the normal degrees and etc. And the launch date is the 14th of June. The course will start in July. It will run every Thursday evening from 3 in the afternoon and run up until 8 o'clock in the evening. So what we're going to be doing there is to deal with all of the different aspects related to aviation management. In terms of our academy, we're wanting to achieve training excellence. We have already, and I'm very, very proud of it, I don't have any pictures here, but we've launched a new study centre. And part of this is that we have a whole room filled with computers and etc. And the young people can go in their own time and sit and practice. Okay, which is something that they didn't have before. So, Jean, we've got how many stations? 40. We've got about 40 stations where the new intakes can go and practice each other control. What the UK air navigation company indicated is that as soon as possible, we must put the people in front of the screen. So we're doing that, and there they can do whatever they want. It's not penalized. We've also gone from a process of saying that the Aviation Academy will get the technology first. We've done that, it's implemented, and we're refocusing over the next financial year, next four financial years, we're focusing internally to ensure that we achieve the numbers that we need in the human capital plan, and we will be selling only the spare capacity. Okay, Gina's come some way really to achieving a full staffing complement on her instructors. We have also now gone through a whole process of reassessing instructors, letting them go to other international institutions to make sure that our instructors are world class and that the value that the inputs are good. So we've already started that whole process, and we're probably going to have NAS come in again and just review us again to make sure that we've implemented all of the stuff that they suggested. In terms of HR, our HR is function within the business is still fairly weak, and we will be working to try and strengthen the HR function. I've appointed a new executive manager, strategic HR. He's not here with us today because he's actually preparing for the HRC committee of the board. They're having a meeting. So we're really wanting to reorganize the way that we provide the HR service. We want it to be a one-stop shop. So if I have a problem, I can go to one person and they can give me stories about my leave and the whole thing. We've also identified, we entered the Deloitte & Touche Desk Company to work for survey. We came 97th out of 130 grade companies, I must say. And so a lot of work has to go into that. The staff office, you know, the leadership in the organization had to be strengthened. So we're really working on a whole range of leaderships. All of the executives, including myself, are now being coached. We also have a whole lot of interventions for all different layers of leadership in the business. So we are cascading down leadership development and training. We have introduced, as I said to the committee already, a new retention scheme. So far, so good. And we are in the process also of implementing a revised incentive scheme. I'm not going to go through all of the HR schemes. Of course, we want to accelerate employment equity. And then very critical, of course, also in our business succession planning. We have to know who is next in line to move through the business. Recruitment and selection, we have to double the number of new people we take this year. And so there's been a very, very heavy focus on recruitment and selection in the last financial year, and the OSCO that I have to really, really perform in this regard. This is something we monitor literally weekly. Okay, we have introduced a new corporate induction program, and we will leverage international recruitment as required. In terms of the human capital plan, we're probably going to need to recruit international controllers. At the moment, we've got about five international controllers, so we don't actually have a lot of internationals. All of our staff, except for the five out of the 254, are South African. and then I also do regular trips. In fact, I'm going to be doing another trip to the Middle East now to go and fetch some of our other South African colleagues back, because probably 100% of the staff there are South African. So when you're flying into the Middle East, it's all South African accents on the air there. So I'm going to go back and finally get some of them to come home again. Yes. Okay. We haven't done a lot on HIV/AIDS. I'm afraid to say, because we've been so busy focusing on getting the right numbers of people just to provide basic service. Now that things are a little bit more stable, we're hoping to be able to focus on aspects like this. Service delivery, obviously we want to grow capacity ahead of demand. Our intentions in this coming year is to increase the number of ECOP movements at Johannesburg from 56 to 60, and at Durban from 28 to 30. We have no plans for Cape Town, because that will require quite a lot of infrastructure on the ground. So that's not planned by access, so we certainly won't be in a position to increase capacity in Cape Town in the next financial year. We obviously want to reduce delays and ensure that our equipment availability exceeds targets. In terms of HMS itself, we are very steadily moving towards a mechanism of collaborative decision-making with the airlines, so that when there is a weather-related occurrence, we are able to reduce the impact on the flying public and the airlines. We obviously wanting to, in fact, we are an RDSM-enabled service provider. We are already on our air routes within South Africa. We separate by 1,000 foot. And then obviously I think the minister has also pointed HMS as the, what we refer to as the ARMA, but it's the Aeronautical Regional Monitoring Agency for Africa. So we obviously do all the preparatory work to introduce RDSM in Africa. At this stage, it's not foreseen to be done shortly. We have not yet found the risk is still too high. And then obviously we're also going to be looking, and we're looking at this very much for the World Cup. We're wanting to use a new technology, multi-activation, as an alternative to secondary radar. It's practically half the price to use multi-activation. We currently, for those members that are not aware, we currently we've piloted at Cape Town, working very successfully. And it's certainly something that we're looking to do at the regional airport, at the World Cup airport standpoint. We will, however, need the CAA to approve that we can do that safely. Okay, then just to give the committee a vision of our staffing intentions going forward. Next financial year, we need to achieve 296 controllers. And I can tell you right now, I have people sitting just simply recruiting for this very important task. We're probably going to see 20 internationals being recruited in the next financial year. They generally come from Uruguay, Macedonia, etc. So we're not, I also want to point out just a bit, Mr. Farrow, that the internationals coming in are not getting any different packages to our own staff. So they are exactly the same package as South Africans. Over the next financial year, we'll continue the process of investing in increased capacity, safety, and efficiency. We have a volume of capacity, I think it's 213 million that we have to spend in this financial year. Slightly less than the last one. We've got four things we're going to be doing. The first is that we're going to be replacing infrastructure. So our HF high-frequency infrastructure, which is the center-to-center communication, that needs to be replaced. We are continuing the process of upgrading the surveillance equipment and the navigation equipment. And then we're also going to be upgrading our AFTN network. In terms of capacity, we have already procured the air traffic flow management tool, which will help us to manage the traffic more efficiently and effectively. We're going to be finalizing the VSAT investment. We have also, we're also in the process of procuring what we call an advanced surface movement guidance and control system. And that really is at night, when you can't see so nicely, each and everything that moves from the airport, including persons, will be equipped with a transponder. So we will be able to see absolutely everything that moves from that airport, from the control tower. At the moment, it's visual. We have to rely on our eyesight, lights, etc. Once the new system is introduced, it will be much more mechanical. Obviously, the transponders must be switched on. And then, obviously, with our smaller airports, we are finding that our regional airports are growing extremely fast. So your Wonderbrums, your Lanxerias, they are growing really fast, and we're going to have to equip those airports with some equipment as well. And then, of course, we're always busy doing research and development. We're always piloting new technology to see how we can produce the service, deliver the service more safely and more in a more cost-effective way. Oh, so the CapEx for 07-08 is $226 million, and we're very much on target to delivering that. What we've done differently this year, we have ensured that all of the tenders are out even before. Generally what happens in organizations like ours, I don't think it's unusual that you leave everything to the last minute and try and spend in the last quarter. We want them to spend from quarter number one. And that is Bonnie's job, amongst other things. Okay, in terms of positioning, I've already given you the story about the SADC visa, the Northeast African visa. Over this next financial year of 7 or 8, we will be hosting the East Africa Flow Management Conference, which is a global conference. We will be hosting the ATS, which is where all the African air navigation service providers get together in one room. An African conference. Then we are also hosting the APERG, which is African Air Navigation Planning Meeting. That is where we plan all the air routes and the airspace for the whole of the African region. And then we also are hosting the HR Subcommittee Meeting of the Commercial Air Navigation Service Organization. We'll continue to participate in Africa in the training environment, and then of course we also this year will be participating at the ICAO General Assembly in October. Financial sustainability, revenue, this is the forecast revenue going forward, as submitted to our regulator. The costs going forward over the next 5 years, profits going forward.
No comprehensive questions or issues that maybe if you want to take up, yeah, a couple of things.
This is a very good report, but if you're going to be so helpful, if we go to the document area, so that it could make sense as you are presenting. At some stage, you were summarizing, obviously, to finish the presentation very quick, and it's not too time for us to even cope, you know. We don't know which page you are in, and you're summarizing. For instance, at some stage, we were talking about targets. We didn't know what you were benchmarking on. So it's important that in the future, you tell us, you give us documents before, and we'll be able to correct about issues as you're talking. And I wanted to ask on the staff shortage that you were talking about, what is the main reason of not employing? I mean, you talked about your process that are going high and all that. And when you talk about medical clearance, medical clearance and all that, exactly what are you talking about? And as one of the acronyms, I wanted to understand what is MSI. I'll come back later.
Chair, how would you like us to run it? Shall we take a few questions?
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation as well. I just wanted to touch on the issue of stock, because you raised quite a few times during the presentation that the level of staffing and the recruitment of local staff seems to be a problem.
and you're going to have to be bringing in international stock. If I recall, a couple of years ago, we had a similar problem where international people had to be brought in. There were serious delays being experienced, etc. What I'd like to find out is, what is the real reason why we're not at, are we not able to adequately source ATAs from local stock? What are the reasons for that? And what are the steps being taken? And the international stock that would be coming in, how long would they be coming in for? Are they coming in for a contract period, permanent appointment, etc.? So to get some clarity around that. Then on page, page 6 of your presentation under section 5, you speak about selling spare capacity externally. Can you just clarify that? Because that in terms of capacity, in terms of your radar, your communication,
spare capacity at the training academy, but I'll talk to it as well. Yeah.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's very fine, because we'll relate it later to something else. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Professor. Mine is also focused on the question of budget. You say you indicated that you don't receive any subsidy from the government. And I just wanted to find out with regard to the training that you are providing, that you said in participating in Africa, you are training people from Africa. So I just wanted to know that there is a fee that you are getting from training those people. And how much is that fund that if they are paying for that training, that money means that you also include it in your budget. Thank you very much.
Okay. What I just wanted to share with the committee is something quite interesting. And we needed to employ 40 new people that will be trained as air traffic controllers. I should also just, before I just point out that to train one air traffic controller costs R500,000. Okay? It can take, depending on where we want to use them, it can take between 3 to 5 years. Okay? Now this is what the market looks like that we're recruiting from. We got 4,200 applications. 1,000 of that 4,200 meets the minimum criteria, which is math and English. Okay, because of course aviation is English and math gives you a sense of spatial awareness, etc. That 1,000 people we then put through psychometric testing, which is a global standard. We were only able to successfully employ 40 people. Okay. So what we're competing with a very, we're looking for a very particular kind of person. It's a person that thinks in 3D, that is spatially aware, that copes very well under pressure. Now, you know, obviously we're going to do, this is the first time that we've actually measured this, but we're obviously going to be doing a lot of work on this to see. Now, in addition to that, we've got 13% global shortage. In China, 1,500 air traffic controllers short. In India, 1,500 air traffic controllers short. In Australia, short. In America, short. South Africa, short. And what is happening is that there's been a whole, air traffic controllers have now become a global commodity. We're basically competing for very scarce skills. Our controllers, if they go to the Middle East, they walk home with 60,000 rand tax-free a month. Okay? Difficult to compete. So what we are doing now is that we are competing. We've got a multifaceted approach to dealing with the staffing issue. The first is to stop the bleed. Okay? Because we can't train if we can't really start the training. We've got to stop the operational priority comes first. So the first thing is to retain existing staff. The second is to recruit those people that have got the highest probability of succeeding. So the selection criteria becomes really, really important. And I just want to show the committee another slide which shows how important the selection criteria actually is. If you look at what happened in 2004-05, we dropped the psychometric score. Okay? And I want you to do this slide in conjunction with the next slide. You'll see that it's on 3.5 with the cutoff score. What happened? Failure. So we were not able to, so for that period, we were not able to bring in, we were not achieving new people through the system because the system has got unchecked imbalances in place. Now, if you look at, we've just pushed it back up to 6, the cutoff score, and we will only see the effects of that in this financial year, 07-08. And so it's very, very important that we do, because if we don't do the selection properly, then we're just wasting money. Okay. So that is just to, and but despite this, we're managing to bring people in. I, in fact, Jean is used to seeing me on a regular basis. I, in fact, as to also, now what has happened in the business, because you've had all this failure, everybody believes that they're gone. Before a guy has to go and do his Enneagram exam, I think they have to go and coach them because they are so nervous they believe they're going to fail. And I have to convince them that they're going to pass. So it's almost, we also have to deal with a whole psychological issue in this regard. I'm quite satisfied that we are seeing a turnaround in the, on the last course, being an 80% success rate. And I'm talking about this a very specific course. Which is called the Enneagram Control Course. On the Academy of Genesis, once you pass that, then you're not going to have failures after that. Okay, so just to say that even though we've got lots of money, it's a rare group of people that we are trying to train. But over and above that, we've got an academy that can take, we can train 1,500 people at our academy, theoretically. But in fact, the control training is on the job training. So you've actually got to have a live position. You can't train them. You train them in the simulator, but in order to be trained properly, they have to be there live. And they have to be validated live. So apart from the fact that they go through their theoretical training, they've got to go through practical training, we had a situation, and maybe I shouldn't say it, but maybe you'll get scared, but you know, but it's very important that these guys are confident and can move the table. Guys must be confident and trying properly. Maybe I'll just tell you the story so it's not so that you don't think it's anything funny. We had a situation where a controller wasn't feeling that confident. And so we had an incident when we obviously the military had an incident, we pulled the guy off position. And we listened to all the tapes, 15 minutes on either side. And this guy was willing himself, saying, I can do this. He picked it up on the tape. So what I'm saying is it's very stressful. And we cannot take any shortcuts. The guy must validate, and the guy must, he must be successful in his own life. And that is why it's not very, and we have the talent, but we will talk a little bit to it because we have, obviously, we'll talk a little bit to it because they also participate in the international structures of Canva and they talk to their counterparts and maybe I'll give both of them a chance just to I just want to answer all the questions and I'll give them a chance just each to talk about the starting situation. In relation to international controllers, the way that we have conceptualized this, I'm not sure whether the board, the committee is aware that in order for us to train new people, we have to have an overstaffing situation. We can't have a short staffing situation. So you will see that a lot of our training actually comes from the African states, okay? And we haven't been training our own people internally. For me, I don't like that picture. But we can't delete our own people. To delete our own people, we won't be able to provide the service. So it really is weighing all of that. With respect to capacity, it's our training capacity. So we obviously will sell speed capacity because it will be focused on ATMS. With regard to training, any work that we do in Africa, including family, we charge a fee. And the fee is really used to subsidize the cost of our businesses, eating as a revenue line item. For all South Africans, we provide bursaries. So all new people, of the 40 people that we took in the last financial year, 70% were black South Africans. Okay? So, you know, somebody said to me, okay, so black people can do this job, and I said, very much so. Okay? And all of the tuition, the accommodation, everything is paid for by the company. Okay. I wanted Bonnie and Jean just to add on the international issues and the stock issues we did this time.
I think the first thing I'd like to say to reassure the committee members that whilst we, you know, talking so much about the staff shortages, if there is one thing that we would like to reassure is the safety issue. We would rather have the delays that I spoke about earlier on rather than, you know, abusing or, you know, using our staff for longer periods than they're supposed to. So the all the discussions we're having around staffing are in the form of trying to make sure that we increase capacity, but safety is not negotiable, it's there all the time. And then the second thing that I'd like to say is around the measures, because one of the key questions from the members was what steps are we doing in terms of recruitment. We have a specific strategy that we have put in place. The first one is the short-term strategy is the international recruiting that Jeanette has been talking about. And in that international recruiting, what we are finding is that most of the people that we are, you know, recruiting internationally are actually South Africans, because in fact it's an industry problem, because even with the pilots, if you are, you know, flying Emirates or Singapore Airlines, you can hear that accent that the pilot is South African. So it's an industry problem. We as South Africans, we're training all our people in aviation to an extent that everybody is gunning for them. So that's the first strategy, is to go out and get all those South Africans who have left South Africa to come back. I always ask my team, where are the retirees? And there's no air traffic controller who has retired in South Africa. You will not hear of any, because I always ask this question. Because we do have roads which could have been used by, you know, the people who have retired. That's the first element of the recruitment is international. The second one is within the system, the pipeline, there's what is called validation, where there was a problem in terms of ensuring that the people who have been trained in Jean's area do validate. And that we now spoke about, people have to sit in position together with an air traffic controller who has already qualified. There was a problem initially there, and we have seen an increase now because we're focusing and supporting our own JTIs, which are on the job training instructors. We're focusing on them and ensuring that they validate more people to become air traffic controllers. So that's the second element of our strategy. The third one is more on Jean's side, which we'll talk about, which is what the flag which Renelle showed in terms of recruiting all the important intakes, ensuring that the process that is there, we have benchmarks, it is in line with ensuring that the people we bring in at the initial level are the people who have the necessary competency and potential, not competency, potential of becoming an air traffic controller, because as Renelle has already indicated, worldwide, we have there is a shortage. We used to take our controllers from, we had an agreement, the time you were talking about there, we took all those controllers from Ireland. And because, their CEO at that time, you know, had foresight, he had extra capacity. I'd like to tell you now that they already have, they also have a shortage now. They, you know, make sure that all their people are back with them, because they also have a website. So the, in terms of the showcase, this is a worldwide thing, and that is why Jean, myself, and you know, Brunel herself are participating in those international projects to try and make sure. So the strategy is threefold. The summary is international, which is short term, and then validation, improving on our validation, medium term, and then there's a long term, which is taking care.
I just want to refer back to Ronelle's slide where she says we take 4,000 candidates in and we end up with only 40 that we can employ. That's very typical of what Islanders have experienced, and when I spoke to the Austrians and the company DFS in Germany, their numbers are actually quite much bigger than ours. We end up with 40 people, I think they end up with 20. So just to give you that assurance that it is not, it is typical of what's happening in the rest of the world. They also go through a very strict selection system because of the long term that it takes to get people through the system and compliance with the high standards that are required for an air traffic controller. One of the advantages of an air traffic controller is you've got an awesome recall memory, so you can train him on anything else as well. But that's one of the things that we've got to assess and assist and train. On the spare capacity side of the academy, we've done an in-depth analysis of what is the academy, the capacity versus what we've handled previously, and we've come up with the maximum capacity of about 1,500 delegates or bumped in seats, as Ronelle likes to refer to. We are a bit advanced in that aspect in the world because they are now also starting to look in NAT and in DFS and in Norway, Sweden, on selling their spare capacity to assist with the cost of the academy or support the cost. One of the aspects that we've also looked at in selling the spare capacity is obviously the positioning in Africa, because we are getting a lot of the African candidates coming through the academy and 2-3 years down the line, say in leadership positions and being pro-ACNS at that stage because they've had a good experience there. And that has happened on many occasions, even before my time, that's been a benefit from the external exposure that we've had through the academy. We have analyzed the training projects in conjunction with the NAT audit that we now refer to, and I think there was something like 46 findings or recommendations, I think they named them. We divided them into the 5 or 6 different categories and addressed each one of them. It ranged from equipment to a managerial process to the actual curriculum methodology to increasing the computer-based training and the exposure right through to the actual selection. And most of my colleagues in Europe and Australia and New Zealand are saying the selection is so important because you're committing to a 3 to 5 year training program and you're hoping to get people for the next 20 years. So I hope I've answered all the questions on the academy, I think.
Just a couple that I haven't answered, and I would like to just have the opportunity to answer. There's two main things. The one was, what do we cover in the medical? In the medical, we deal with obviously hearing, oral, color, because all of the stuff that you think of screens that can't be colorblind, they must have good speech ability, and of course they mustn't be deaf. So those are some of the medical requirements, and you'll be amazed at how many people are colorblind. So that is something. Then just in terms of what is an SSR, an SSR is secondary surveillance data. And what an SSR does, you have two types of radar. The one is primary, the one is secondary. With a primary radar, we can see anything that moves.
okay, whether you've got a transponder or not. Okay, with a secondary radar, but with the fact that it can see everything that moves, we don't know what it is. It could be a UFO, an aircraft, it could be anything. Okay, we don't know what it is. So it doesn't give us intelligence information back. Then we use a secondary surveillance radar, and the secondary surveillance radar will tell us what it is. An aircraft, this is the call sign of this aircraft, this is the size of this aircraft, this is how fast it's going, etc. So secondary radar helps us to interpret the movements that we're seeing on the screen. Currently we use in our airspace at the busy airport, we use primary and secondary radar. And we're hoping to use multi-lateralation, which is a much cheaper form of secondary surveillance. And she just, it's not an excuse, but I do apologize that the member has received the documents late. We in fact sent it down to Cape Town, in fact, in preparation for the 2nd of May meeting already. So we sent it on the 20th of April. So it was sent in advance. So I do apologize for any inconvenience.
To mark a price church day, I was not aware that ATM is not government subsidized. So I just want to know what there is the relationship between government and new people, or what is government's role in that?
Thanks. I think a lot of my questions have been answered, but I just want to enlarge and try and get a little bit more information, which maybe Renal should actually send under different cover because it's detailing. But I would be very much interested to see, you know, the cost of the academy vis-a-vis the outcome. You spoke about the training being plus minus half a million per student. And I would just like to see what those costs are in terms of some incurrence there. So if you could just give us as a cost center what the academy costs in terms of, you know, your direct costs and what the actual income from your other students are being paid of, or you're recovering from those payments. So if we could do that. And just to take it a little bit further, obviously the academy is sort of linked to some sort of accreditation, so I'd like to just establish what that accreditation is. Is it based on something internationally, which I assume has to be, or is it just based on our own scenario in Africa? And secondly, whether there's any contribution that's coming into this academy from the CETAs, in effect, the aviation one in particular. And just to give us a clearer picture of some of the costs that you incur, be they capital or even expenditure against staffing, et cetera, whether you could just give us a little bit of a breakdown of this in the budget form, because, you know, just seeing a figure of so much coming in and so much going out and the net profit does not really give us an understanding of what's happening within the organization, which I would appreciate getting from you. I think that's really what I was about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first question is that I understand we are number 5 in the world. I just want to check in Africa. HNS, what level are they in South Africa in terms of safety? The second question, Chair, is that what is the current incident rate per movement? My third question, Chair, is around the employment equity. Chair, the issue around employment equity that really I want to raise is that the employment equity is a direct intervention of government to legislate the question of employment equity. Now, as that particular intention of government, Chair, I just want to check, when is the ACNS prepare to raise the target
on that particular act, because the act is very clear that from time to time the department companies must be able to have a particular target to reach in terms of employment equity. The last question, the utilization of recruitment in the internet, whether has it started already or whether HNS is working towards building that particular site whereby they will be recruiting to the internet. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Just a few quick questions. The first is during the presentation it was mentioned about the growth in some of the other airports in South Africa and the interior of Wonderboom, and that there's going to be a need to put some equipment there. Could you just expand on that? Does air traffic control in those airports privately run or is it run by AATS? Could you just get some expansion on that? The second question I just want to ask, Chairperson, is related to the training of students from other African countries. Whether we could get an indication as to what impact that is having on making the African safe car for traveling. Could we just get an indication as to what impact are we seeing? Are we seeing an improvement? And linked to that, how does ATNS, because we've had this recent accident in Douala and so on, and you keep hearing about bad condition of aircraft and so on. So it's one thing to have good air traffic controllers, but if your aircraft are not safe, so what linkage is there between ATNS and not necessarily civil aviation in South Africa, but aviation authorities in other countries? Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. They're all very, very good, interesting questions. I'm going to start with the last question first, which is the accident in Douala. Now, in fact, that particular aircraft is a brand new 737-400. So it probably had nothing to do with the aircraft. Now, I don't want to add to the speculation, but I do want to maybe just intimate that weather probably played a very important role in that accident. Now, in our own environment, as I said previously, we've got primary and secondary radar, so we can, and we get a weather radar feed from Seoul. So we have quite a good information in relation to the weather conditions. Also in that environment, two other pilots actually opted to stay on the ground and were not just basing on weather reporting. The pilots, you know, obviously all of the issues, I mean, the aircraft is important. Now, in this case, the aircraft is new. The pilot is important. In this case, the pilot is really, really experienced. You know, the captain was actually a very experienced pilot. So all of those things actually add up. It's not just the quality of air navigation. And I think one wants to add.
What I'd like to add specifically, in fact, it's a good example because it's a recent thing. ATNS participates in the search and rescue. In fact, the Department of Transport has sort of delegated that role to ATNS. We have one of our employees who is leading the search and rescue issues within South Africa. And because of how an aircraft, you know, comes down, I have been briefed, you know, before I even briefed my CEO about this, that we were part of assisting in identifying Charles said he was part of the team which assisted in identifying that aircraft. You know, the technical language I won't be able to say because he did it from South Africa. So in assisting the safety of the skies within South Africa, especially that particular role, we have search and rescue, which is in fact a DOT role.
but it has been delegated. The trust works very closely with the GOG as well.
Yeah, there is a multiple component of certain rescue is provided from HMS, and in fact the tariffs have a certain rescue component built into it.
Okay, just in terms of HMS, we don't receive any money from the government, but the government is the shareholder of HMS. So the Minister of Transport is the main shareholder. And of course, he delegates the activity to the DOT. So my colleagues here from the DOT see a lot of us, and we see a lot of them. In fact, we have quite a good relationship with the DOT on aspects of oversight governance. We also share a final shareholder contract with the chairman sizes with the minister. And currently we are just finalising the 078 performance agreement with the department. So that's the relationship. It's not a financial one. Then we also provide two services on behalf of government, in fact three. We provide a nautical search and rescue function on behalf of government. We also do the slot coordination on behalf of government. And we also do the regional height monitoring on behalf of government. So those are all functions that have been delegated to ATNS. So those are some of the relationships. In terms of the costs of the ATA, the ATA costs ATNS 25 million rand every year. Okay? But we've got to understand that the cost of providing the service is a sunk cost, because you've really got, you're going to provide that service anyway for those facilities. Just in terms of how that's broken down, 51% is on staff, okay, and you've got to have the staff there. 16% is spent on facilities, 32% is spent on other overheads. Now, we have had some experts looking at the cost of the academy, and what they have said to us, and we're still in the process of analysing the academy in a lot of detail, but they've said that we really provide the services at an optimal level of cost. So our costs are not too high or too low. It's just very, very well balanced. We have, I think the committee is probably aware, and I would very much like the committee to come and visit us, because we have a sense of that academy. It's like the Tower of Babel, you know, you speak Arabic, French, English. We've even got a prayer room for our Arabic speaking delegates. And we've got state of the art facilities. We've got simulators, we've got state of the art equipment and facilities. We have guest houses that we use for delegates. Then we are accredited with IATA, we're accredited with ICAO, and we're also accredited with the South African Civil Aviation Organization. And we're also in the final stages of getting our CAQA accreditation. CITES don't put any money into our academy, although we are trying to have discussions to that effect, in particular around the aviation management course that we want to run for the industry. We certainly would welcome CAQA, finances. Just to deal with, you asked a typical question. In relation to this? Okay. Jean and Bonnie will add once I've done my little bit, I'll give you some more of the details. We provide services at 12 airports on a contractual basis. Now this is, at the moment, this is one of our strategic issues. That we've already identified as an issue with the board, but we obviously still have to come up with a solution. Our relationship with the airport is such. We will provide the air traffic control service, in other words, the bodies, but they provide the equipment.
So the tower is included in Central, all of those places. It's owned by the airport owner. Sometimes the owners are private, sometimes the owners are the provincial authority, but we have a contract that governs that relationship. What is happening though is that the traffic is growing really, really fast. Somebody has to be fixed. Who? We don't know. Now, if I invest in that area, then Bishi is going to say, but why did you put in that VGCE at that area? Why didn't you put it in with us? So it's a very tricky area, and we are still trying to inspect it's one of the things we're going to have to look at going forward. Now, you must also take into account that these regional airports are not, in fact, profitable. The only airports that are profitable is Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Durban. Okay, the rest are just there to provide the network. So it's really tricky, something maybe that the DOT. Yes.
Maybe the
DOT
is challenging
yourself. No, I can't because
it will create associated problems.
Yes. So that is something that is just identified, the traffic is growing too fast. Our guys cannot be put at risk by accommodating that growth of traffic. So we are either going to have to slow the traffic down or we're going to have to put in technology. And at the moment we're discussing who's going to pay. So I'm being very honest with you. It is, and we play that with the 20, yes, we play that with the 2010 team. And then training in our African skies. I'm going to comment about genes in fact, she also wants to comment. I just want to give you a very simple example. Rwanda, DRC, all of these countries, the guys we train. We train not only the consultants but also the technicians. Because don't forget, we can't run the system if we haven't got engineers and technicians either. And they critical. We can fix the system off just like that and no one's got any common. We have found, for example, and Jean Mother, you can remember the school with the number one that we came, they didn't even have shoes for graduation. This is the kind of situation, and I think that we're having an exceptional impact on the continent. The DRC is the biggest piece of airspace on the continent. We have to have air traffic control. I do believe that we're adding immense value. We've just like got the Algerian contract as well, so we'll be providing training for Algerians. But I believe that we're adding immense value and that the training academy is critical to the positioning of agencies on the continent. We mustn't forget that all the traffic coming to South Africa is coming across Africa. And so there's a strategic reason why we're involved on the African continent. It's actually so that we are owning our own economy. So it's not just goodwill, it's also an economic motivation and peace of mind. Yes. And then just talking about HMS in Africa, I hope I'm not going to be vain if I say, I think we believe we're probably the best in Africa. We're probably one of the busiest in education providers in Africa. But we have very, very strong links with other air navigation providers. I mean, at any one time, we've got 3, 4, 5 people somewhere in Africa. and they'll be working with different providers. Our incident rate is reducing. It's coming down, and it's probably also amongst the best in the world, not just in Africa. And then in terms of employment equity. Our target was to achieve 50-50, 50% black, 50% white. We're 3% short on the black target. And more recently, we also started monitoring the number of women. We've got only 37% of women. But I'm very pleased to say that on the executive team of the 8 executives, 3 are women. So I think we're doing quite well. 3 are women and 6 of us are black. So I think that's also quite a good achievement. But they have to cascade down. Internet recruitment.
we are doing a lot of work, but we're not yet there in terms of achieving it. So we are doing work in that regard. I'm now going to ask Bonnie and Jean just to add a bit that they found. Jean, that's okay.
Okay, so in terms of the incident, Kenneth, because I think you wanted to what as in today, we are at 3.4. We are 3.4, that's the last month figure, which was
8,000.
Yes. And I think what is also important is that the movement that we're talking about D-level movement, there is more movement than the 100,000. All general, the helicopter, smaller aircraft, they fly underneath our airspace, we don't count those. So it's actually more than 100,000. And the other thing maybe is on the regional airport side, just to emphasize what Janelle has indicated in terms of the importance of ensuring that we have proper equipment there. Because the kind of relationship that we have with the airports, specifically those who are not AFSA managed, those that belong to private owners as well as the local authorities. There is a little bit of an issue there in terms of the equipment that there is a claim that they don't have enough money to upgrade the equipment, and we find our controllers have to work under those circumstances. So there is a strategic decision that needs to be taken in terms of do we have to subsidize just to make sure that the sky is safe. But Mel has already indicated that we are working on that. Okay, the link that we have with other navigation services providers, Renaldo has already indicated that there is an organization called Kenzo, which Renaldo is a board member of, and then as executives, we participate at different levels. I'm in the benchmarking one, Jean is in the HR one, and in this organization that we're doing, we're comparing ourselves with what is happening worldwide. Mainly, we have been divided into groups. For instance, we are being compared, we look at the size of airspace and the complexity of the airspace that you manage in as a country, and then you are compared to those. We are compared with Australia, with New Zealand, with Ireland, Czechoslovakia, as well as Thailand, Bangkok. We have been grouped with those over and above the bigger world global estate. So we are participating, and as Janelle has already indicated, she said we are number 5 from the global one. And then in terms of Africa, again, you know, without sounding, you know, we are leading the team in Africa. In fact, we always have other air navigation services providers in Africa sending in their executives, and then we take them through what we're doing, and there is that learning process, besides the fact that there is an equipment sharing in terms of access to the navigation service. I think that is all from my side.
I just want to respond one quick one to the impact that the Academy has on in Africa vis-a-vis the trainings, and I'll answer both of the others. Just wanted to add that ICAO has come up with a recommendation that everybody has to be grade 4 English compliant, and Renal alluded to, you must come to the Academy, it's a bit of a melting pot of nations. And people coming here from Algeria speaking French, from DRC speaking French, and we actually have got a rater in the Academy that can rate the people on the English training that they undergo. So they come in here speaking a multiple of languages, but they all have to have at least a level 4 English. So they do go out there with as he's speaking English, so in a very small way, we do assist in keeping the guy's English as per the ICAO recommendation.
I'm actually worried about the training, and I actually just want to start on the secondary school level. Are we at ATNS having some brochures or flyers that can actually give indication to secondary students what is required for entrance into ATNS job opportunities? I think that's the one thing that I'll ask. The second one, it is, I'm sure everybody is aware about the flaws within our educational system in terms of capacity to give particular levels of teaching and training of matriculants to mathematics and science. And we're having situations where we have potential good math students who are actually advised to take lower grade math, and some are even advised to forget about mathematics for purposes of maintaining a high pass rate of particular schools, although you've got low quality. Now, on that basis, I'm sure in the engineering field, in a couple of years back, we had similar situations where certain technicons had to introduce pre-technicians course to actually bridge this kind of problem. What is your intention in terms of this particular situation? Where we definitely not getting rid of people that will actually excel in ATNS, but I mean they are not having good quality metric results because of this other funny problem that I've just explained. The third question relates to the recruitment of nationals into ATNS, and you have actually given us a picture that all other countries also have problems of shortage, but then you are still banking on recruiting from outside countries. Surely that particular source is going to be depleted very soon, or it has already been depleted. And given this kind of a situation, I want to ask now, what is the criteria of entrance qualification for those that we are training from the African state as compared to the criteria that we are employing to our own internal recruits? Is it the same, or are we receiving students coming from African states with lower entrance requirements as compared to ourselves? And if that is the case, what would be our attitude when we have to go and recruit agencies from Nigeria who actually entered our training at lower entrance qualifications as compared to ours? Thanks.
Okay, I think again.
Thank you, Chairperson. When you do the your recruitment this financial year, can you, I don't know, I just wanted to ask if you do your recruitment all over South Africa, or do you only concentrate on certain parts? But Chairperson, I've been asking myself, should I ask this question or what? But since they are the air traffic controllers, I just want to find out from you, do you have any comment towards global warming? South Africa is said to be part of, it is one of the countries that are polluting more in terms of air pollution and all that, and it's affecting global warming. So do you have any comment towards that? Thank you.
There's a lot of many around the training and recruitment issues.
Chief, thank you. And again, I'm going to get all my colleagues to add parts of it. Let's start again with the last issue first, the environment. I have to say that there's a very big tension within Canada at the moment, because there's almost like a developing world kind of scenario going on. For us in the developing world, environment isn't at the top of our agenda yet, because we're focusing on safety and staffing and the basics, you know. Whereas in Europe, it's a big issue, and in fact, the Commercial Air Navigation Service Organization even commissioned videos to, you know, with the BBC to get the issues across. In terms of air navigation, obviously, I'd like to see that it's a high priority on others. Okay, but it's certainly something, in fact, I was working on the aircraft last night, because we're going to be delivering this training program. And environment is obviously one big part of that. And there is an environmental policy, I don't know if it's been approved yet, which was done as part of the aviation policy review. And as a company, we are going to, for 2010, for example, we might have to slap some of the environmental requirements, because in order to increase capacity, we have to set an aircraft, one aircraft straight, one to the right, one to the left. At the moment, we can only route them in certain directions, but in order to increase capacity, we're going to have to. So, my answer is inconclusive. Maybe my colleagues will comment, but it's something that increasingly, it's a big international issue, very big, and within 18 years, in fact, in the UK, they've got environmentalists that are lobbying that we don't expand aviation going forward. That's how bad it is. But we don't have that same kind of pressure at the moment on the environment, but it's a critical issue. In terms of our recruitment, we recruit all over South Africa. In fact, we had a colour advert which cost us a fortune, because we wanted our advert to jump out, you know. We've actually got a colour ad that we use. In your pack, sorry, Mr. Chairman, if I can just leave now, really, for a short minute. In your pack, we also have, this is a video that you can play on your machine. It's also our career marketing video that we use with the school. We have, in fact, got a whole brand for our career marketing. It's called Hasi Bakutlu. The sky is not the limit. Okay, and we basically work with ISAA and all of the other aviation players to try and do joint marketing. Okay, then we would...
Are you targeting
the college? We're targeting high school. We have tried, we've tried all different avenues, but we don't exclude university graduates, but we just find that it doesn't work for them, because the first 2 years of training is actually really boring, and they have to do quite, you know, and so they don't stay on stage. So we now recruit matriculants, 18 to 25 years old. And they must have a symbol C in mathematics on the lower grade, second grade, and they must have a C in English on the lower grade, and on the higher grade we take a D maths and a D English. But even for that, we're competing with. I must also add that our engineers have also been included in the retention scheme, because there's also a shortage of engineers in the country, but. And our engineers are obviously with the aviation radar. We've only got one radar engineer in the country, one satellite engineer, you know, so we've got to hang on to that with our dear life. We would welcome, in fact, these are our hypercultural plans. We found that a pull-up banner to that is a city's pink, because we also did a study which said that young girls are very attracted to that color. If you pull up, if you see a city sink something somewhere, the girls will be attracted towards you. So all the colors are not accidental, there's a reason for it. In terms of visiting the ACA and FHAS, that's an open invitation, and we also do special visits for the young people. So if you want to bring children from the constituency, we welcome that. The security, getting permits are very difficult, but we even managed to get back on these days. It's even difficult for us as executives to go into our own factory because we can't get permits, but we managed to sort that out. Recruitment of nationals or foreign nationals. As I said earlier, we only have 5 foreigners in our company, okay, working as air traffic controllers. Only 5. We are foreseeing a situation, as Bonnie indicated, in order to train our own people, we have to be overstaffed. So as a short-term solution, we are going to be bringing in more foreigners to train. Now, what we find is in the world, there's a market out there, and the way the market works is that, in some cases, for Macedonians, Uruguayans, I've actually got someone in Uruguay right now recruiting me, for Macedonians, Uruguayans, Zimbabweans, etc., our salaries are good. Okay, so survival of the fittest. It's steal from whatever you can afford. It's really not a good situation. But that is, I'm afraid, the situation, and the salaries just get pushed up, 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 up. So now the guys in Zimbabwe, for example, they don't work in a radar environment here, but they'll come in and they'll get radar experience, and then once they work with us, they're coachable as well. You know, so it's just a global cycle. So what we're saying to you is that we also must control the path, because we're the global player as well, and we have to compete with then in terms of we've got brochures, we've got videos, we also run a magazine school, and we would be very happy to work with any of the constituencies. At the moment we run a winter school in June every year for the matriculants. This year we're going to be doing a Mpumalanga, Limpopo and Gauteng again. What we do is we take the kids, they come to ACMS for the whole week, they live in, they have accommodation with us. We have a maths lecturer from British University and spend the whole week just going through the maths with them. And then what we also do is we also introduce them to air traffic control. So it's very subtle. We then take them into the tower, etc. And now we're also beginning to monitor how many of those people are we getting onto our courses. So we try to do that. Some very, very bright young people. Not as much as we want. What we find is, as well, is that we have such a, like, the principal of Orange Farm School in Gauteng sits through that entire period with those young people. He sits there with his matriculants, and he does everything with them. So we get a lot of support. Nkumalanga, the MEC, was involved, and Zimpopo as well. We couldn't strike a deal with the Western Cape because they somehow they didn't pick up at the meeting, and we came to the meeting, they weren't there. So. But we'll still follow up. And then this year, we're also hoping to run a, what we're also trying to do with air shows. Like, for example, there was an air show in Mafeking. What we did was we invited all the teachers in the area so that we target the teachers. And then what we're hoping to do, and I'm not sure we've got a lot on our plate this year, eventually we also want to run a math summer school where we put the, we actually have an examination situation. The kids write exams under pressure because part of the, you know, part of math is about just surviving in that pressure situation. But that's something we've unfortunately got a lot on our plate this year, so I won't promise it for this year, we'll see how we go. But we're very actively involved with the math education because we feel that that is where we could make a dive in there. And then in terms of the other African people coming to the academy, we don't select those people. Okay, we don't have a sense of their selection process because we don't really, I mean, they pay for their people to come. They select the people, we train them, but we train them to different parameters. Okay? Our airspace is just, it's 5 times more busy than any other airspace in Africa. Even probably all of it put together. So we certainly, you know, at the moment, for example, Pilanesberg, we've got a Zimbabwean controller working there because the traffic conditions are similar to where he comes from. So that could certainly be, we've also brought in some Kenyans, Zimbabweans, but they're working in the environment that they have to validate first. So they don't just come and work, they've got to go through our speed training and they validate on that. Okay. And then I don't know if my colleagues want to add.
Just one quick one. We don't train African country people on what we call core content, in other words, amnesia, from the secondary school level. We only get them, they're already qualified in traffic controls. They come on to almost a refresher course. And that's the intervention on the traffic control side. On the engineering side, also get already employed, already trained people to come on to specific navigational type equipment training with us that we can offer. So we don't partake in the selection process at all. Hope that answers the question.
Thank you so much to Renata and to the team. It was very comprehensive, and we had a lot of time as well, which we often don't have because we had a full morning together. But obviously two big things emerged. I mean, one is the one that we're talking about now, and especially it's the staff issue. It's a challenge, but one's reassured that your focus is also very much on their training and retention of this very competitive skill. So it's an ongoing challenge. And then the second one was the one that popped up around the equipment in the smaller airport and how to sort that enough. And I think that our recommendation as the committee must be that the Department of Transport, well represented here, needs to drive that process. So we can't allow it just to slip through the cracks. It's obviously very important. And their position to talk about it. And maybe your rates can be increased if the trade-off for that is that you will then carry the burden of self-investing. But I mean, you'd have the understanding of capacity. We're trying to build presumably an effective national system and national grid and so forth, and you're the leaders in that process. So. But we need to say that. But otherwise, thanks very much. And as always, it's a reassuring input. So thank you for that. Okay. So then I hope to announce some of the visits that we have been planning to some of the host cities. What we're doing is going to have a look at host cities for 2010, the preparation.
being a critical moment, because unless the infrastructure starts to move now, we won't put down legacy, we'll just do some ad hoc things with the last minute. So there are, I know that the model has been working on the issue all field today, so I don't have the details in front of me.
If I may take the liberty of just putting some in-house issues on the table. The one thing is that I'd like to inform you that I feel that it's necessary that the minister and the team responsible for e-natives comes and as a matter of urgency report to us. I don't know whether you have the same responses from not only the media but the people out there that are suffering from these, from the queue, etc. And I'll bring you a letter if you don't mind, just to request that, please. The other thing is that we've got an outstanding issue which we still need to address, and that is relating to when we did the amendment to the NLPPA. There was a task team set up by GITA to actually go and undertake the looking at certain clauses and also the tourist industry per se, and I haven't had a report back about that now. I'd appreciate if the department could just tell us where we stand there, whether we're in for some more legislation to amend and to follow that one up. And then the question relates to the Caltrain, if you recall, we also wrote to the DG requesting some report back from the WeCare initiative, Centurion in particular, in terms of that routing. We try to interrogate SARTC when we hear, as you well know, but we never still got an answer exactly what is happening, whether they're looking at the options for the alignment there and that issue. And then last but not least, we set a long-standing agenda relating to our logistical railroad type issue debate for this year. And I was just wondering, what is going to happen about that. I've seen some sort of stuff in circulation relating to presentations to this committee about that, but I don't think we need to lose track of that too. I'm sorry to raise these things, but they just keep coming up, and as long as you've got it on the agenda, I'm happy.
Absolutely right to raise every one of those matters. In regards to the very last matter, the road freight stuff, we do want to begin to start looking at that, and we have scheduled that. I don't have in front of me the program, but in the next few weeks we certainly want to deal with that. At the beginning, dealing with it's quite a complex issue. I would be also keen to hear more on what's happened on the Centurion matter. And we haven't. What was the second matter?
The other one was the NLTTA.
Yes, there is a report that I've been receiving from the side of the stakeholders from the tourist sector, who seem to have reported good progress in some, but then it would be interesting to know what's going to happen in terms of the actual regulation and any legislation. We keep getting this, I think Dion would be able to confirm otherwise. I mean, there's a whole long list of proposed legislation that's supposed to be coming to us this year, but it keeps falling off the program. And that does concern me, because on the side of the leader of government business, they raised concern that there was a lot of pending legislation from transport, and often me, as the chair of the committee, to kind of trim it down, they thought it was far too much. And I said, looking at them, they were all like either straightforward matters, like international conventions and so on, really, which all matters that we have, which might be complicated, but which we regard as a committee of serious. And one of them was the amendment to the National Land Conference.
Which the world kind of also mentioned,
tourism issues, So the department is well aware, certainly through Dion, well aware that I've indicated that we want the legislation, and we want to move on to something. The other one is the road traffic unit, related in this, but the road traffic infringement act and things and the implementation around that. So those things are, I'm concerned, and I think, and then finally, we should certainly, I think it would be a good opportunity for the minister and all DG to use Parliament as a way of explaining. Obviously, challenges, things do happen, and sometimes these things are not difficult, but sometimes these things happen. But I think the public does want to know, and I think Parliament is the right platform, or one of the right platforms to have an in-depth explanation of the challenges and what's going to be done. Let me try to shift. Okay, thanks very much.